tuning in to the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Yes! Welcome to the Blacklist After Buzz After Show with a little Skullamity Sneaky. What's it called?
Radar Love.
By the Skullamity Sneakies.
Yes.
Yes. That voice here, I'm Joe Braswell. It's good to be back. Episode 6 of the Blacklist. You guys have seen me here for all 6 episodes. You know who I am. Who is, you also know who Julia Carey is. Good to see you, Julia.
Hi, guys. We know each other. But.
And you may remember a young man named Joe Sanfilippo.
I like the song behind it.
Who decided to grace us with his presence.
I am so happy to be here.
The triumphant return.
I am so, so happy to be here. I'm sorry, you guys. It was work stuff that kept happening. It was yobs.
All right. Tell it to the people. The people want to know.
I cannot imagine they really care, but I'm very happy to be here.
And people were upset.
Oh, they care, man.
Do they?
They care.
Well, I'm happy to be here. This is very exciting.
Fire his ass. Some people
fire
were like,
him.
Yeah, people were mad.
Fire me.
Like, does he even care?
I do care. And then, are there any other questions?
Others are like, I love you, Flippo. I don't care what you do.
I care what I do. I thank you for your love. And those of you who want me fired, that is just mean spirited.
All right.
Yeah, but
angry.
Most of them say that Flip can do no wrong.
It is a little mean spirited. I take it back. I don't want you.
How many times did you tweet that?
Exactly.
We missed you, Flip.
It's my handle, not Joe Braswell. My YouTube handle. Fire him. Welcome to Blacklist After Buzz After Show. We have a almost full panel. I think we'll return with a full panel after the break. That fourth seat will be occupied by someone who I think we love and know, but we're still working on that. But for now, you got three of us.
Woo!
That's pretty good.
Not too shabby.
Also, that's like a 33 3% increase, as far as I can tell.
Exactly. Also, what's pretty good was this episode. Episode number 6, Sir Crispin Crandall.
Crandall.
Which is such a... is there a more made-up name than Crispin Crandall?
I feel like everything about his character was just over the top and amazing. I loved it. Yeah, it's a perfect name.
Sir Crispin Crandall.
And that he's been knighted.
Yes.
On top of it all.
He's Sir Crispin Crandall.
Yeah.
Somebody had to say it with a sword in their hand.
Yes.
Sir Crispin Crandall.
Crandall. Not Campbell.
No, Crandall.
Crandall.
You have to hold the R to make sure. Is he Scottish?
Oh.
He might be. I don't know.
He's number 86 in the Blacklist, which I'm lost in the Blacklist.
Did we figure out a methodology at any point?
No.
I mean, even Entertainment Weekly was talking about this. Is like, remember that thing, the Blacklist? This is the third week in a row where Red gets someone off of his Blacklist that he didn't realize was on the Blacklist.
Well, we talked a little bit about it a week ago or so, where I feel like there's two separate Blacklists that are going. It's Red's agenda Blacklist and then the FBI, or Red's for the FBI Blacklist.
Sure.
Because he referred to Andres Helmy as who they've been searching for this entire episode.
Yeah.
To the FBI as the next name on the blacklist.
Right, exactly.
So you're saying there could be a primary, a secondary, and a tertiary blacklist?
Yes.
Quite possibly.
We could have 7, 8, we could have 12 blacklists, depending on how long this is
going
to
go. What we've determined is that the blacklist is fluid.
It's fluid.
Yes.
I love that. It's a very fluid situation.
Yes.
That's what Julie and I came up with, is that the blacklist is fluid.
I love that. That's brilliant.
So we have a lot going on here, man. I mean, look, I don't know. There was just, it felt like, and I said the same thing, and I read the same thing too. It felt like this was just a bunch of like ideas in the leftover on the board or in the bin from all the writers that they just sort of said, you know what? What about that?
So we move billionaire over here. Plane that never lands. That's a good one. Let's put
Fight
that right
Club
there.
Thing, yes.
Okay.
Bond villain in the sky. Sure.
And then Tommy, you were talking about cryogenics when they freeze. Put that up there too.
We'll make this all in the one show.
This is good.
But it was great. And I said that to myself, and the exact same thing. I give him credit. Jody Walker at Entertainment Weekly said the exact same thing, like literally verbatim. So I feel vindicated in my theory. But listen, sorry, I have to lower my chair slightly. Does that work?
Better.
No. That was a classy, smooth way to do that. Yes. That was really there's probably an easier way to have done that, but there you go.
Okay. Perfect.
Oh, there I am. Okay, so if you're joining us on YouTube, hello. You can see us all. Thank you very much for listening on iTunes. We very much appreciate you guys on iTunes. You guys have really responded on iTunes. I appreciate you guys going to iTunes and reading us and letting us know what you think about the show. It really helps us on the iTunes side because it helps other people find us, and it helps us sort of, you know, get our mojo back, if you will. Those of you watching us on YouTube, hello. You've been also very loyal, and thank you very much for commenting and watching us every week and being patient with us as we sort of right this ship. But we're kind of, I think we got the right time. We got the right people and Joe Flippo, and we're doing good.
It's a mean-spirited little man. And he's huge, too. He's like 6'5", but he's a mean-spirited little man.
Joe, tell me, just because you've been gone, what has been your experience with the first 6 episodes of The Blacklist? Assuming you've watched them. I'm assuming you've probably watched a couple of them.
Yeah. it's been a little bit of a mixed bag for me, because I love what they're doing with Spader. I love very much that they've kind of made him much more... what am I trying to say? He's much more in the action. I love that he's on the run. Oh, I love that whole dynamic. It's terrific. I really like what they're doing with Tom. I think to me, Tom's like a great example of an audience beloved character that the writers have evolved as time goes by in response to the audience. He's a character that couldn't have existed 15, 20 years ago when you wouldn't have had this kind of interaction between the audience and the writer's room.
I mean, clearly the people love Tom, so it's like, how can we do some cool stuff with Tom? And, you know, it's a long way to go from the sensible sweater and the glasses to the wife beater and the, you know,
in the caged death match. I love it. Match. Yeah.
So, yeah, I would never thought that that's the same guy, and I love it.
And I like the psychological stuff they're doing with him. Like, he killed that dude, and I'm sure we'll get to it later on, but I mean, these last couple people he had to kill, it really impacts him. These are not casual for him anymore.
Yeah.
I really like what they're doing with the task force. I like what they're doing with the director. Mm-hmm. And obviously Spader's the shit out of things, and I love that.
Good.
And that's
so you're liking it.
I'm liking it. Yeah.
Julie and I are liking it too. We talk about the tone this year being very much they got away from the nonstop action and it being to more sort of a mystery, sort of the mystery style procedural, and then now they're kind of doing this mixed with the fugitive on the run stuff. I like the balance of writing. I think it's like the writing's really good this season. I mean, not that it hasn't been good before, but got a lot less of the grandiose, you know, plots and just sort of really honed in on sort of procedural mystery, like in the moment stuff. And it gives the characters an opportunity to really shine. And as we talked about before, we get to see inside Red's world. This episode was another opportunity for us to see the other side of how Red operates. You know, like, how does he do these things? How does he pull off all this crap? How does he, you know, use his influence? It's very fun to see that side of Red's world.
It really does. I agree with what you said. And I like really the idea that, you know, you come to somebody's house on Thanksgiving or Christmas and you walk around, everything's done just right and everything's perfect, and you go, you're living the life. This is great. But if you see him if you see him that following Tuesday when it's all falling to crap and they're going nuts, you wouldn't want that life. And I think it's kind of like that. That's what I like about what they're doing with Red right now. Like, we've seen the really great Red, where he's just having, you know, he's sipping the wine and he's on a private jet and he's the whole thing. But now we see the other side of that, the flip side, and that, I really like that. Welcome to my world.
Well, we've seen him also lose control. We've seen him panicked. And we've also seen a more sort of like impassioned side of Red in these grandiose speeches that he's been giving.
Yeah.
These very impassioned, kind of, rather than just these whimsical stories that he tells of this one time when I was so-and-so, this is a little bit about his character and the way that he thinks and views the world.
Right.
In his impassioned speech to the Jin's father.
Sure.
Yeah, a couple weeks ago. That was great.
A couple episodes ago where he got really quite heated about it.
Yeah.
And tonight, or last night as well, when he's talking to Sir Crispin about what his ultimate plan is and why it's going to fail and why he has no business doing anything of
this
sort.
It's a good way to give Red, this master criminal, some complexity and some morality, because we know this guy, what makes this guy tick in general. Okay, he cares about Lizzie in some way, so therefore he's motivated by, he's got a soft heart for Lizzie, but he's still a cold-blooded killer and manipulative guy. But now we're getting to see a little bit more of, like, sort of his ideological views. You know, even he's still a cold-blooded killer and wouldn't manipulate, but we get to see his big picture ideology, you know, on a lot of this stuff. And but then in both cases, in the Djinn and in this case, after he'd won that soapbox about the Djinn, he left her there, you know, on the helicopter to get done. And after he went in his soapbox with old Crispin what's his name? Crispin Crandall. Mm-hmm. He said, well, let's find out. Bam. Shoots him dead.
Yeah.
Which Brad's been doing a lot of that lately. A lot of, like, just point blank, you're dead, which is, I think is very cool.
But it also gives a little insight into why Lizzie is still with him and still following him and becoming more and more like him every episode.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I agree. I wanted to get into the episode itself. I want to talk a lot about, you know, the appearance of the director and his presence. And I think, you know, Strathairn, man, he's also classing up the joint.
Love him.
He's really classing up the joint, right? Like, he, you know, his presence, I mean, no offense to Cooper, but, you know, the whole dichotomy, like, whole, you know, having Strathairn lurking around and, like, you know, saying all this stuff and, you know, I'm not your relative and we're not house guests. You know,
yeah.
I don't need the pleasantries. I love all that. And then, just again, skipping ahead, but towards the end, that, you know, first of all, we had a couple of monologues from the director himself. So he's given some Red-esque monologues in this, a couple of, like, sort of preachy things, especially when he was interrogating the guy mm-hmm. and saying, you know, I almost was a priest or whatever. And
can you imagine?
Yeah, like, that was very Red Reddington. Except
he's a master criminal as well, the director.
Yes, it's like, so you're very much seeing, like, his, you know, Red's opposite. And when they faced off at the inn over the phone, that was very apparent to me, like, oh, they're really, like, Red's sort of, like, This is Red's real nemesis here. Mm-hmm. This maybe the director is the super blacklister I've been looking for two seasons.
Well, one of the things they do with the character I think is so well crafted, because it's not a Bond villain. He's not a he's very subtle and he's very understated and he's vulnerable. And you sense the vulnerability in him. You sense very clearly. Well, they've really laid it out very clearly that this is a guy whose position is precarious,
right,
no matter what. And so, but the way he tactically goes about moving through things, and I don't know how much of it is actor choices, I don't know how much of it is writing choices or what the combination is, but it leads to such a more nuanced character than some of the other ones we've seen in that, you know, like Cooper, for example. Not as nuanced, you know, and they've given him all the nuance. It's in the structure, but just doesn't seem to be translating in the writing. But because it just seems the character that they've crafted for him is so much more strong, more like a unbending, unyielding. But the director has so much more flexibility, and so it creates a much more interesting character, I think, to watch.
Sure.
They seem to. I feel like the writers are much stronger in writing their "quote unquote" bad guys,
yeah,
and their master criminals, yeah, and they are their good guys, their heroes.
Yeah,
they have clear rules.
Well, yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, so it's more fun, I suppose.
Yeah, right. You have a flexibility.
Stakes are a little higher,
and a moral flexibility that you can kind of go. Oh,
indeed.
All right, we can do that. That'll be fun.
Let's get into this, because I think this is there's a lot going on. I mean, we have our procedural element, which is a blacklister, which is obviously Sir Crispin Crandall, who's a guy who's flying around. And we find, like, you know, this arc, building this arc of cryogenically frozen geniuses to be able to create
up in the sky
to create this complete utopian society to save mankind long after he's gone. Super Bond villain move right there.
Beyond.
First, I'm going to fly in this plane.
Beyond Bond villain.
Then I'm going to freeze all the geniuses.
Do you think there's an actual culture? Is there somebody doing, not necessarily the cryogenic freezing in the Ark situation, but I mean, is there somebody that just flies?
Oh yeah.
Well, there's an International Space Station.
No, but is there a guy who's like a thing?
That's a thing, because if you remember from the I think it's a thing. If you remember from the Bob Zemeckis, Jodie Foster movie Contact, the billionaire who funded her second outing after the first one got sabotaged by the religious zealot played by Jake Busey, the guy who was in, it was this billionaire who decided he did the same thing. He didn't want to touch the ground. He was like a Stephen Hawking type. He never wanted to touch the ground. He flew the whole time. He only stopped to refuel. They totally bit that from Contact. Mm. And I think Contact got that from a guy who actually does that. So that's a thing. Like, I don't want to touch the ground. I live up here. I'm rich enough to just fly in my 747. So that happened. And ultimately, in Contact, he ended up being in a space station and hovering in a space station around because he didn't want to touch the ground.
How,
do you remember that?
I do. I remember
that plane. The plane that he's in.
Well, 737, right? It's not that big. I mean, it's big, but it's not huge.
It wasn't.
You see him walking around in there and it taking off?
No, it was like a, because the military graph, I forget what it was. It was an A something something, but it can't. 737 is like a Southwest flight.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I didn't think it was a very big plane.
Anyway, I'll find it. But so anyway, so we have the blacklister doing his thing, and then we have the goings on at the the post office with, you know, the director walking around and the wrestler and Navabi trying to figure out what's going on with the director, and it's kind of working with Red. That's kind of an interesting subplot. I mean, Navabi and wrestler and Aram, I should say. Mm-hmm. You know, working together, trying to figure out what's going on there. Then you have, of course, Red and Lizzie on the run, doing whatever they're doing and their thing. You know, so those are the three main plots. And then the subplots beyond that, whatever's going on with the director and Mr. Solomon, whatever kind of like back and forth is happening there, we don't know about. The larger game about what the Red versus the director, what's happening, you know, what is the larger end game here? And so, let's start with the Blacklister himself, and his plan. Now, the whole plan, it seems like these Blacklisters now are just devices for us to get to the thing that Red needs to take down Fulcrum, right? Take down the Cabal at this point, right? Every Blacklister he gets to is just another puzzle piece.
And it takes down someone in the Cabal every time.
Right. And so I think, therefore, it seems to me the writers are just, the Blacklisters are almost like these MacGuffins. They're like, you know, they're not really the thing we're after. It's the thing that they're adjacent to. So it allows them to make the Blacklisters themselves pretty, like, outlandishly ridiculous. We have the Djinn who can grant your every wish.
You loved the Djinn.
The Djinn. Can grant every your deepest desire. We have the crazy billionaire flying, you know, super flying guy. We had the super evil farm terrorist guy.
Did anybody ever answer how the girl living at home with dad had the $700,000 to offer up?
Yeah,
to kill?
It was a crowdfunded site.
She didn't have to have the 700 grand.
No, she
it was like
she
a Kickstarter.
A Kickstarter.
All right, you guys, I'm very excited about
pretty
killing
much.
This person. All right,
that's
got
exactly
it.
Okay.
Pretty much that's how they did.
And
that's
they
how they explained
Bitcoin
it.
And it got up. And
so what's the deal? You get a T-shirt if she dies. Is everybody like? Is that your crowdfunding prize?
There's levels, and of course,
okay, there's T-shirt, and if you get all the time, it's ear.
Yeah, or, exactly.
Okay.
Anyway, but my point is that, like, I do like that they're having fun with these Blacklisters because because it's really not about the Blacklister, right? It's not about the guy, so they can have all this fun with whoever the guy is or whatever the guy is doing. In this case, they had a lot of fun with him. As ridiculous as it was, I liked it. I liked him. I liked Sir Crispin Campbell, played by Harris Yulin, as a crazy billionaire. I mean, what did you think of him? What did you think of that performance? What did you think of him?
Oh, I thought he was fun. I mean, I could watch him on screen all day. Like, sure. His character was, you know, so well developed and jovial and so believed in what he was doing and just wackadoo that I found it quite compelling and entertaining.
And it didn't bother you at all, Joe, or either of you guys, that was so over the top. It didn't bother you that was said.
No, I love the idea. I really, really do of getting to the place where money doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah.
Because can you imagine what a complete mind F that would be if you get to that place? Because there's nobody in your life that's ever going to argue with you.
Yeah.
There's nobody in your life that's ever going to tell you you're wrong. There's nobody in your life that's ever going to sit down with you and go, I'm sorry, Sir Crispin Crandall, your name is crazy and your idea is terrible.
Right.
You know, that's never going to happen because everybody wants something from you. So can you imagine, what that would do to you over a period of time? I think it's a flipping miracle that any of these billionaires are sane.
Yeah.
I really, really do. Because, I mean, if you have people that work for you, even just if you're small time and you have people that work for you, nobody ever tells you you suck. It just never happens.
Right.
So imagine that exponentially expanded to everybody that you ever come in contact with because everybody wants to do business with you. When the hell do you ever get questioned? I really love
the
idea.
I'll tell you when you get questioned. When you run up with Red Reddington.
Yeah, Red will question you. And the FBI left you alone. You're refueling. Your people are disobeying. Yeah. I just love that idea. I love that you can create a character where there's no social mores anymore because he's risen above them.
I agree. There's not really much to say here other than he was there. He was flying in his plane. He was freezing some geniuses. You know
how we do.
Red made him land. They got there. They got the thumbs. They got out. I don't know. There's not much really to say about
the
Blacklister. I think that we're going to find more and more of this. There's going to be less and less to say about the actual Blacklister. I'm more interested in what's going on behind the scenes.
That's always what I've been most interested in.
So let's talk about what's going on at the post office and with the director and wrestler and this whole, you know, what do we think about, you know, we talked about last week and we've been talking about, like, we're not quite sure where Navabi is on this whole thing. She's kind of leaning
towards...
It's pretty clear
now.
Now she's like with Wrestler, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's kind of like... It's a real clear line. It's Wrestler, Aram, and Aram's in there too. Mm-hmm. It's Wrestler, Aram, and...
Navabi.
And Navabi really trying to... You know, able to work with Red and also try to... And give select information to the director. That's a cool setup, right?
It's a great setup. And I really adore wrestlers, sort of like all American. We have you know, systems in place in case we catch him. I was like, really, wrestler? Really?
The director's not going to kill Lizzie.
I mean,
this is the United States of America.
We got safe.
The president's going to look pretty bad if that happens. So he's gonna be cool, guys.
Lizzie's going to be fine.
And just in case we got some protocol.
Yeah, we
it's
got a protocol.
It's gonna be fine. There's protocol, guys.
I told him he has to call me if he's gonna shoot Lizzie, and he said he would.
He said so.
Imagine the paperwork he'd have to fill out if he shot Lizzie.
I mean, there'd be like pages of it.
He's not gonna go off book.
Right. That was very sort of earnest Boy Scout.
I know.
Even if Bobby was kind of like, come on.
It was kind of adorable.
But when we see, like, actually the whole notion of them leaving and then the director's like, what are they really like? Let's see what they're really like. What are they hiding from me, you know? Which is interesting. The thing that's bothering me about this whole thing, which I'm just going to let go, I'll say it one last time.
Okay.
And we've said it a thousand times in all of these shows, and this is a Joe Sanfilippo
moment. Wonder what?
Is, you know, the entire, you have the command of the entire, the largest law enforcement agency of the United States of America on your side, and the first person through every door is wrestler Navabi.
No matter what.
In her cute tank top.
She looks hot in that tank top.
She did.
She's always wearing a hot tank top and
hot
a vest.
Hot tank top and a vest.
Yep. All I could think to myself was, is it, when I go to a place, I like to know where I'm going. Like, if I'm going to go to a sushi place, if I'm planning on eating sushi. If I'm going to fondue, I just don't go because I can't eat. I'm lactose intolerant.
Oh,
but if I'm going to a chirogenics lab, I'm probably going to put on a shirt. I'm just saying.
You look less hot.
I would, but I would be warm. I mean, that was my first thought. I'm like, she's got to be cold.
Right. There was a moment, speaking of Navabi's tank top, where they were in the war room with the director and they were going through all the plot points of what's going on in the whole arc, and she walked up to give a little speech in her leather jacket and tank top, and there was a look that the director gave her. I don't know if you guys caught it. It was hysterical. What? He looks at her, looks down at her and her outfit and, you know, her
situation.
Her situation, thank you.
What are these?
You know how to deal with them. We're talking about it, yes.
I don't know what that is.
She never make jokes before a show starts.
Never.
So she's never going to translate.
So, you know what? And then she was wearing the tank top after that. I was like, oh, you know, it's a choice.
God, yes.
It's and the director's
does.
In
it's
on it.
Does.
I don't know. I just loved that moment because I love Strathern so much.
He's great.
He gives good face.
He does. He gives great face. I like the, you know, that they seem to know what's going on. And what's going on?
I'm fine.
Okay. But whatever. They're the first people through every door.
Yes.
Every time.
No matter what.
And that's fine.
At least I had a little bit of backup this time.
Even wrestlers like, you know, wherever they're in Utah. Let's go.
Right?
Like, what?
Should we make some calls to Utah?
No.
That's dumb. Get in the car.
Get in the car.
We'll be there in 3 days.
They're around the corner. Let's go. No one don't even fly first. I'm first to the door.
Well, you know what? I did like, though. I did like the shot where he was standing outside the house after they'd taken the first the girl, the mathematician.
Yes.
And he's standing outside there, and the real close up on his eye. And then there's a slight movement. Boom. And he goes. I like that. I like that wrestler T-Rex action where he only sees movement.
Where he was a super agent.
I
gotta say I got a little
nervous at that moment.
I think that I just want to say that entire. I thought the entire
was scared
scene.
Of him.
I don't know. There was like the way that the sound changed and the focus on him, and I wasn't sure if they were going for a wrestler's going to be a super agent or a wrestler's going to get shot.
Well, they can shoot him.
Yes, they can.
All right, well,
it's only episode 6.
They can do whatever they want.
All right, fine.
Here we go. So I will say...
You were saying you enjoyed that scene.
I enjoyed this episode. I enjoyed that scene.
You know, they could have killed wrestler right there. I don't know.
Well directed. Very well directed episode. I thought the way that sequence went, I thought it was very well... Hello. That sequence was very well directed, like the shot of her under the bed and seeing
scary.
The feed, and then, you know, them pulling her under, and you see just the shot staying under the bed, seeing the struggle.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
This is to every writer's room in the world, whoever, if anyone ever listens to anything.
This is the part
say.
Where Joe says.
What's
wrong with you writers in the world?
Why
can't you write better?
They do such great stuff. I just want to, can there be a special super duper task force to find another thing to get people out from under couches or beds or rocks or whatever they're hiding under other than cell phones going off? Is there anything else that we can do?
I don't know.
Can we find crickets? Can we find...
It used to be a sneeze.
A sneeze? Sneeze would be good.
Cell phone.
Something.
All right. Well,
because you know what's going to happen. Oh, cell phone underneath. Oh, cell phone's going to go. Bzz, there it goes. All right. Can we do something else?
Yeah.
Anything else?
Yeah. When you write your hit show for
NBC. That's what we have to do. We have to write a hit show for NBC. And that'll be
your first ever business.
That'll be the pitch, too. You guys, here's what we're going to do.
First of all, what I'm not going to do, NBC, is I'm not going to have no cell phone going off. Like, I'll tell you that right
now. Hiding, never going to happen.
All right, so...
What's the show about? No, we don't have one. But that's not going to happen.
Very well-directed episode. I mean, very well-directed episode. That sequence was great. Like, good action sequence and rest of the foot chase. All that was good. How about the scene... I don't know, did Navabi shoot him in the head like that? Oh, blood.
Yeah.
That was a cool scene. That was also, like, a lot of, you know, I'm you know, again, another headshot in the, you know, blood splattered in my screen. At 9 o'clock at night on NBC.
Thank you very much.
Woo. Anyway,
we are a violent people.
That was a great sequence. I really also like what they're setting up here. You know, with the director inside there. I'm glad we could see more of the director.
Yeah.
Operating and doing his thing is good. I love seeing, you know, Strathern, you know, have more to chew on and do. I'm really interested in this relationship between Strathern, the director, and Mr. Solomon. Like, who's pulling whose strings here, Julia?
Not sure exactly.
We keep saying go back and forth. At one point, it looked like Solomon was in control.
Yes,
and
I can't.
The director's like, if you think da-da-da-da, and they're like, who's in control there?
I think the director was in control, mm-hmm. and then he effed up, and the Cabal got out when he... and the Fulcrum got out when he assured the Cabal that Red did not have it, when indeed he did. So Solomon, I think he was sent to sort of put him in his place right. and scare him.
Right.
So Solomon thought he was in control, but now the director is desperately trying to regain control, which is right. sort of what his character arc has been so far in this season.
Right. But it seems to be a power struggle of
it
some
does.
Sort. Right. They're not just two guys like, you know, a buddy cop movie hanging out like Solomon the director. It's not on NBC. It's like it's a power struggle.
Well, Solomon's behind the scenes, and the director is very much so in front of the media and in front of the world. Right. So Solomon has a little bit different reach than the director has.
But do you think in the cabal on the cabal masthead on the cabal, you know, big board, it's whoever is at the head of the cabal, and then it's like, is it the director and Solomon side by side, or is it the director and then Solomon? What do you think?
I think it started as director Solomon, but right. Solomon has now climbed up. I don't know.
Mm. What do you think of Solomon, Joe? What do you think of Solomon, the character of Solomon? Like he's...
I don't know. The whole thing is fascinating. I mean, it's like you guys were saying earlier about the Blacklist. It's totally fluid. I think that, and I think that's what makes it interesting. Because if it's a straight up thing, then you have an hour and a half. You have a Bond movie, really. If it's a straight up like boom boom boom, you have a Bond movie structure, and that's it. And that lasts you an hour and a half, and it's done. But the way they're doing it now, you can keep moving around. You can keep messing around. You can milk. I mean, that's the deal, right? You got to milk the most you can out of every relationship to keep these things going. 22 episodes in a season.
Yep.
So, yeah, I think what they're doing is great, moving it up and down.
I like Mr. Solomon.
I love Mr. Solomon. Yeah, I like really... seeing a super crazy villain who enjoys right. what he does, yeah. the despicable things that he does.
It yes. feels
with no remorse.
Everyone we see is sort of like grounded in some sort of like. The character is really grounded, and they're really like very serious, and they're very, very capable people of doing what they do. The only people that seem to be out of place in the Blacklist now are the Blacklisters. Every time that's like, I really want to see Wrestler, and I really want to see, you know, what Tom and Cooper are up to. I really want to see what, you know, what Red and Lizzie are up to. And then, like, the Blacklister comes. I'm like, what's the Blacklister doing here? So, I mean, I guess we need a Blacklister on the Blacklist, but it's just really interesting way to set that up. So, we'll see how that whole thing plays out, that relationship,
sure.
and hopefully we'll get to get some more insight into how the cabal works, mm-hmm. or the structure of the cabal, or who's really pulling the cabal strings, or what all this stuff means. That, you know, it also...
Mr. Solomon doesn't seem like someone who is officially in the cabal.
Well, yeah,
he seems like someone who's been hired by the cabal.
He's representing somebody else, yeah.
Right.
Matthias, he's representing somebody else higher up.
Right.
So,
but,
I mean, whoever it is.
But David Strathern is not... Is he in the cabal?
Well, he's the director of the cabal.
I don't know. If so is it like a director of the cabal? He's the director. I mean, the director refers to his title not in the cabal, but his title of the government.
So here's the question: Is the cabal? I mean, do we think it's structured like a corporation? Like there's real stockholders, and then there's people that are administrators. They're not really, you know, you don't really have a. You don't have a stake in the game, or you do have a small portion, but the real stockholders are behind.
I mean, I didn't take a look at the.
I'm just saying, who's on the corporate letterhead?
Yeah, I don't know who's employee number three.
Is there a board of directors?
Employee number one at the cabal. But
how do you fire the CEO? I mean, how does that happen?
So let's jump back. So that was happening. So no, the Red and Lizzie thing. Red's whole thing was to get to my man. Andres Homme. Andres Homme, in order to get, for whatever reason that we know now and later. I love the way, you know, again, seeing inside Red's world, I love the whole thing of their prepping this, whatever they're prepping. With the attorney, what's my man's name? The attorney.
Gerard Marvin.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
Love him.
I love that they're prepping this place and they're trying to get the permits and it's this and that and the other and we don't know what it is, and then he's like, does it bribe him? Do whatever you have to do. Red tries to bribe him. It doesn't work. It's
the inspectors too, man. You know, I know how they work.
And you see, the whole thing seems a little like, why are we doing all this? Why are we spending time? But at the beginning, it's like it gives you insight into Red's world. Like Red's like, I have to do this thing, throw money at him. That doesn't work. Find out whatever you need to find out. He's got a daughter who can't cook. All like little nice details. Like, I forgot to put the egg wash on. Sorry, I got a break. Like, all that stuff was kind of good. I thought it was good. It was fun. And then, you know, bringing her in, and we've got the restaurant, and now we know how Red operates. And then the further reveal is that it was all for a big heist, which I thought was cool. I really enjoyed all that. All those choices were nice. Were you bothered by that? No, I
enjoyed it very much. Okay. I have a little question about that.
Why were they going through the trouble of inspectors? Like, what were they building in the first place if they were just going to break through a wall to get into a bank in Montreal. I was a little confused.
Why would you go through all the trouble? Why wouldn't you just rent the space and then break through the wall?
Stop asking questions.
Okay.
I mean, how are we going to create a situation for her to make her pastries?
I think they needed access to, because it's next to a bank and a safety deposit. But they were
already in the space,
right? But then
what were they building?
They're probably knocking down walls and to get access to electrical.
Since when does he ask for permission for this stuff? Okay, all right, fine.
Listen, you know what? It doesn't matter. I mean, I've heard that. I thought vaults were, you know, like, but I didn't know that a lot of them just had lids. I did not know that you could just. I didn't know. Don't give me looks.
I thought the whole thing was fun.
I mean, I loved the heist scene. It was really fun.
Yeah, it's a great heist. Okay, so let's get back to let's go. So
that happened. Welding and bolts.
So we know that happened. We get the heist scene, the thumbs. I thought that was cool. Use the thumbs, leaving the thumbs in there, getting out. And by the way, quietly, Dimby's fine. Wrap him up. Keep him moving. He's on the heist. He's on the job.
Dimby.
Good to have Dimby back. And Lizzie was awful, like, you know. Like, oh, Dimby.
Lizzie, I have to say, was completely pointless in this episode. She did zero things. She said almost zero things. And it was fine.
That's why I liked it.
I enjoyed it.
I'm like, I thought same thing. I'm like, not a lot of Lizzie in this episode.
Did nothing. At one point, she was just sleeping on a couch.
Yeah,
I'm like, perfect. Where's Lizzie?
There she is.
Best acting yet.
People are
better when
bad
she pretended
people
to be dead.
Oh.
Yes. Anyway.
Sorry.
I'm sorry, Lizzie. We love you, Lizzie.
We do. But, so blonde. You know. She's getting blonder each episode,
yes,
by the way.
Yes, exactly.
And her hair looks better and better every episode.
She looks great.
She's taking some time to, you know,
to
a little curling
good
iron action, some hairspray when you're on the run, you know, why not?
Yeah,
hey, listen, you make
when you're rolling with Red,
that's how you do it.
You look your finest.
Every time you pull the hoodie off, your hair gets mussed.
It's true.
So you gotta put it back. All right. So,
sorry.
Uh-oh. Sorry, not something. So the heist was great. We know why. We got the thumbs. We have the whatever it is. It's the director's.
Well, that's what
cash.
It was. His stash.
It's
that was his. That was his
been
running away money.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's like, we know that you've been skimming off the top. I'm going to expose you. They're going to kill you. That last scene, by the way, with Red and the director. You know, and when he told him like that sort of back and forth, and I can't remember the exact lines that he said. But it was incredible. Like, what do you? I know you have to have.
Oh, I don't know if I wrote this down last night.
Oh my god! Anyway,
I'm sorry.
The threat.
Talk about the golden parachute.
The threat that Red gave him was amazing. I loved it.
Oh yeah, that your people will be begging me to kill you.
Yes,
right.
Get it, Red. You know, and the director's like, I'd like to see them try. Whatever, we'll see. But being like, whatever.
I must decline.
All right, so that was all great. But let's skip back over to your boy, Tom Keene.
Let's please.
Tom Keene. You're blocking the camera.
But, oh, I apologize.
Tom, you know, you're in my, come on, people.
What's the problem?
Tom Keene, Our boy Tom Keene.
Badass mofo.
Badass across the board. Like you mentioned you went through it earlier. Badass across the board. You know, him and Cooper. Cooper, and I like that scene at the beginning where Cooper sort of the nice bit of exposition.
Oh, God.
You know.
Oh, no.
A little,
I died.
A little too much exposition.
Do you have any idea who you're dealing with? Let me remind you.
Yeah, let me remind you who you're dealing with, audience. His name is Charlie Vulcans.
Listen, this is a complex show. I'm grateful.
No, it's,
every time they have like
it's
a...
true.
Just a reminder.
Just to remind you and the audience who you're dealing with. Because there's a lot of names here.
A special organization called the Cabal. Yes. C-A-B-A-L. Tom, did you write it down?
But then I had to laugh out loud because he was so, you know, Cooper was so mad about, like, do you know who you're dealing with? And then the list that he gave, I was like, eh, not so bad. You know what he's doing? He's a drug dealer, he's an extortionist, and he runs an underground fight club.
I was like, "Have you met Tom?"
No, no, but I was like, "That's not that scary. That's like one of our friends,
right?" That's like the people I went to high school with. I'm pretty sure.
Like, what is that? I don't know. You know what you're doing? He's a drug dealer.
He's a sociopath.
He's a sociopath.
He is.
He's an extortionist.
Yes.
And he runs an underground flight club.
He's just an all around bad guy.
I don't think you know who you're dealing with, Tom.
No. He never puts his egg wash on his pastries. Ever.
Yes. So anyway, so Tom's
not
like,
even once.
Tom says, I can handle it. And he sure could handle it. So he goes under deep cover and he has a bust in and said, and that question was asked, will you let Asher die? Asher Sutton may die. Will you let him die? If I have to save Liz. He's really going ham with the save Liz thing, right?
Yeah.
Like he's like Daniel Day-Lewis in Last of the Mohicans.
It doesn't matter. Anybody, I'll take them all down.
Everybody wants to save Liz.
Except for us.
You guys are cold-blooded.
Everybody wants to save Liz.
I mean, come on.
Oh, God.
So he gets with Sutton. But he has that moment where I thought, it didn't go how I thought it would go, when he's like, get out of here, you know. And he tells the girlfriend.
Gwen.
You know, Gwen. Who? What happened to Gwen? Did she make it out?
Gwen?
Yeah.
I love, go find a place to hide and don't come out. I'll just go out the door.
Yeah, she's out the door and she's like,
meow. No one will look out the door. I felt bad.
By the way, I liked that performance. I like Gwen.
I thought she was great. I was in on Gwen.
Yeah. I wish I was in on Gwen. You know what I mean?
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls.
I thought she was great. But when Tom was back there doing his thing, you know, I presumably kicking ass, he was actually getting his ass kicked.
Yeah.
And for him to wake up, you know, so the chain tied to him.
Well,
and
he wanted to be caught.
Yes,
he had to be caught. He just didn't necessarily want. He didn't want Asher to be caught.
But he didn't know that he was going to get caught. I mean, who knows? How did he know they weren't going to kill him?
Well, I mean, I don't know. All around bad guys, like drug dealers, and extortionists, and
they
sociopaths.
They run an underground fight club.
Yeah, they want to toy with you a little bit.
Sure. So he wakes up chained to Asher,
and with this Skeletor midget dancing around him.
I don't want to talk. First of all, that
sure,
was
a little person. I'm sorry, my bad. Whatever. I was scared. That guy scared me. That was terrifying. He was supposed to be.
I don't know what's going on there, but that was very that
he
was
good. He scared the piss out of me.
That was all.
That was pretty good.
The voice. I don't know if there
was. I was like, is it dubbed or is it that? Is that dude's voice?
Or is it maybe he's trans? Maybe there's some reassignment there.
I don't know, but it was crazy,
I
right?
I had to think too deep into it.
Okay, but I thought it was cool.
It was a good hire.
It was a good character.
Scared the piss out of me.
So they're chained together. Here's the one thing I know we're running short on time, but I never, the moment that Asher Sutton lost me in the last episode was like, I used to fight in the underground.
Yeah.
I'm like, Asher Sutton? Like, I could, you know, I sneeze and Asher Sutton goes down. Like, he's in underground fight clubs? Like, this guy
and
with
he
the
wins.
Hair?
He wins.
You know, and he
that's
wins?
Why he's in trouble, because he won.
A lot of people don't know how you sneeze. That's the problem. He's a bad man, but, you know, your sneeze is powerful.
So, and then I'm like, well, maybe.
Well, how do you know? What if he's like a wiry whip?
Well, this is what I thought.
Right?
I thought that. I'm like, well, maybe.
So they didn't bring that, though.
No, I thought he was going to kick a little ass.
I thought, too. He got up, and he's like, put your hands up, man. Let's do this. I'm like, Asher's not convincing me at all.
So you're saying they did not deliver on the promise
of
Asher
in
the fight club?
They did not deliver on the promise of Asher being the badass fight club guy. So
it was over pretty quick.
Yeah, it was over pretty quick. And then Tom had to take him out.
Had to do it. With an I'm sorry.
Yeah, with an I'm sorry. In a very Saving Private Ryan-like moment, you know, with a knife.
Really, right?
Yeah, that was sad. Really
quite
cool,
slow.
I'm sorry.
That was a little upsetting.
He had to do to get Lizzie. So then they take him to see Kettlecoot in a very cool.
This was the best Tom
Jason
I've seen this whole season.
Yeah, it was pretty.
Like, first I'm gonna do this, and he's already quaking in his boots, and this guy's gonna get shot, and we're gonna do that right now. I'm like, oh, okay,
wow,
and he did it. Now we've seen that a few times in a bunch of other movies, but I bought it.
Yeah,
I loved it.
I liked it. And then that last shot of him just dragging Karakut out, like, I'm Tom, baby. I got my man. Like,
I heard Jolene in my head. Jolene.
I mean, Tom, he infiltrated the joint.
He did it up.
He had to kill some folks. He did a Fight Club thing. He wore a tuxedo. He got beat up. He Jason Bourne some motherfuckers out. And he got Karakut.
I gotta tell you,
good for him.
My wife came in the room. She just gone to the gym. She came back as that whole scene was going down. And she kind of looked up and she goes, well, that was hot.
Was. Huh.
Well, there's the demographic. There it is.
Yeah.
Right there.
Your wife has fine taste.
She does. She screwed up once. Right? She zigged one time when she should have zagged. And I was there. And you were there. Zig!
All right. So those are fine episodes. So we have lots to go. Let's get into some, let's get these predictions. We'll get out of here. I know we're going to wrap right now. Can we do predictions? We have time for that? Here we go. Boom.
And now, you're after Buzz TV.
So we have Tom with Karakut dragging him out.
Mm-hmm.
We've got, Red threatening the director. We've got, Wrestler and Navabi and Aram, kind of inside being double agents-ish, but trying to follow the law. We have one episode before the fall finale. What's going to happen in these last two episodes? What do we see? What's going to happen? Go, Joe. All right. Julia, I didn't go to you first.
That is the first time in the history of my AfterBuzz career where you didn't call on me first.
I know.
I was counting on. Never mind.
And Julia. I'm thrilled.
Okay, we'll go, Julia.
Damn it.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
We got 90 seconds.
I think we might see Gwen again.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah, I think she's gonna come back. I don't know in what capacity. I don't know if she's gonna ruin things a little bit, or if she's someone that we didn't, think she was.
Yeah,
I'm not exactly sure, but she's coming back.
As a weird agent or something, like
something. Yeah,
because she who are you?
Who are you? You came into our lives. You targeted us.
Yeah.
Yes, I did.
So she.
I have this sneaking feeling that somehow Red is still in touch with Katerina Rostova.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he might be doing a lot of this for her for some reason.
Oh, that's a good one. See, that's why I call on you first.
See?
You're like, I don't know. And you're like, here's the
deal.
Here's
some good stuff.
Here's some good stuff. Except with the exception of the jewels and the corset. Joe, do you
I think Matthias is going to be eventually, I think eventually we're going to have Matthias is going to kill the director. Yeah. And then I think Matthias is going to be the one who ends up killing the director, and then that same episode, they're going to be able to. I think Dembe's going to get Matthias. I don't have any idea how that's going to happen, but I just, as an audience member, that would be incredibly satisfying.
Well, we are definitely on a bullet train to a Matthias, a Solomon, Dembe showdown.
No question.
That'll be awesome. More black on black crime. That'll be awesome. And, what?
Sorry, it's an issue I hadn't thought about with regard to the show. I just thought there was so much more going on.
I do agree. I think Red is. We're gonna get a visit from Katrina in the back half of this. Katerina, but Lizzie will be exonerated by the fall finale. But then I'll open a door for something else entirely, which I don't know what that is. We gotta get out of here.
Yeah,
that blew. Bye.
Can we do a quick shout out to Nancy Marcano?
Yeah, shout out
Nancy Marcano. I don't. My brother told me I had to shout out to Nancy Marcano because if I don't, I'll be beaten at Thanksgiving. So shout out to Nancy Marcano. We love you.
Hi,
love
Nancy.
You, Nancy. Joe, where can the kids find you?
On the Twitters at Joe Flippo, JoeFlippo.
All right.
And here at AfterBuzz for the first time.
Yes.
Exciting.
And Julia.
You can find me on Twitter and on Instagram with my name, Julia Carely, JuliaCarely. Follow me.
And Julia's on a TV show.
No, don't. No.
Never mind.
It's over. It's done.
There's a TV show she's on. I'm not going to say what.
Nothing.
There's reruns.
Nope. All right. Go on.
At Joe K. Braswell, Twitter, Instagram, and Periscope, maybe. Email me if you want to know what TV show it is.
He's not going to tell you.
I'll tell you.
Shut your face.
Thanks, guys, for visiting and watching, and we'll see you next week. Bye.
What TV show is happening?
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.